Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. We're back in our main Cleveland studio. Steven, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How about you?
Doing good. Been a busy week for both of us, I think.
When is it not?
More so for you than me this week, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we have to talk about Jemele Hill and her tweet calling the president a white supremacist and the subsequent response from both the general public and from the White House. If you don't know who Jemele Hill is, she's on a show called His and Hers on ESPN with Michael Smith.
I think it's actually Sports Center at 6.
Oh, they changed?
Yeah.
Sorry. She used to be on a show. Okay, so anyway.
Recent change, but not a big deal.
Okay.
Anyway, go ahead.
Shows that I don't watch much ESPN anymore. And so she called the president a white supremacist, basically saying he hangs around with white supremacists. He is one. And the White House, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, issued a statement saying this was a fireable offense. I've got some thoughts on this, but I'd be curious to hear where you come out.
Well, I mean, technically anything is a fireable offense, right? I mean, ESPN is a privately held company, and then they make their decisions on who they hire and fire and the reasons why. You know, a lot of people are drawing the comparisons to conservative people that were let go, whether it be Rush Limbaugh or Curt Schilling,
right?
For what they've said. And it's a little bit, you know, Rush Limbaugh, they let go.
What he did was different because it was on the air outside of their practice, right? It was a live show, and he tried to. So if you don't know, he was on the ESPN NFL Sunday Countdown, and he claimed that Donovan McNabb was only getting the credit he did because the league wanted to promote a black quarterback, which, if that's your opinion, fine. It's a pretty dumb one, but fine. But what's shitty about what he did was he ambushed his team on the air with that thing. If you would have done that in rehearsal and said, hey, guys, I want to talk about this, that's one thing. But trying to blindside him was just a dickish move, and that's what got him fired. Anything that talks about Rush Limbaugh getting fired makes me happy. Sorry.
Okay.
All right.
So, yes. So that's why Rush Limbaugh got fired. So then, you know, Curt Schilling's issue for getting fired was he repeatedly posted things on social media that, you know, ESPN had warned him multiple times, like, don't, you know, kind of air this sort of stuff.
And they bordered on racist, as I recall. I don't remember what they specifically were.
Yeah, there were a couple, and I had looked at the specifics, and I don't remember what they were, but they were, you know, there were things that ESPN had, he got multiple warnings, he overstepped, and then finally they let him go.
Right.
And so, you know, this issue with Jemele Hill, this is her second incident. I know Curt Schilling had three with posts of social media of sketchiness. You know, Jemele Hill's first incident was back in 2008, where she had said rooting for the Boston Celtics was like rooting for Nazis or something like
okay,
that.
Okay, that's pretty dumb.
And she got suspended for that. And she, at the time, she was just a, not a reporter, but a contributor or something along those lines.
Okay.
And so, you know, she had got suspended for that, and that was in 2008. You know, so it's been 10 years, and then she does this where it's on her own personal Twitter, but that, you know, the lines get blurred there.
Yep.
And she calls the president a white supremacist, and, you know, based off of, you know, kind of if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, then it's most likely a duck. And, you know, obviously white conservatives everywhere were butthurt and were demanding she be fired and were very, very upset. Liberals all got behind her and said she was white.
Whoops.
You know, obviously, you know, black people all across America, you know, raised a fist in unity and everything else. I'm kind of neutral on it. I don't know. I stand pretty firmly on the path that, like, I don't like Donald Trump, and I'll call out his policies. I think there still needs to be a certain level of respect for the office, no matter who's in office, whether it's Obama or whether it's Donald Trump or whether it's George W. Bush, whoever it is, whatever your strong opinions are, I actually don't care. You need to respect the office. Otherwise, because if you don't, then what the fuck is the point of having it, right? And so, like, I like the look on your face right now is infuriating me because there needs to be that certain level of respect. I get it. Stop. I get it. You got a microphone in front of your face. So you feel you should be able to say whatever you want.
Oh, I will.
She's got a fucking Twitter and a microphone and a camera in front of her face, and she feels she can say whatever she wants. But again, that office of the president, now, while it should be respected by the person in that office,
okay.
as a citizen.
Before I can say it, you didn't.
As a citizen, I think that there still needs to be a certain line that's drawn. And we've continued to overstep that line. We've continued to say whatever we want to say without repercussion. And I think that there should have been a greater repercussion for her for saying that, not because what she said wasn't true, but because you need to, like, you keep that shit to yourself. Right, you want to criticize his policies, criticize his policies. Now, I can sit here and make an argument for what she said, right? I can look at the fact that Donald Trump didn't want black people in the apartments that he was renting in New York. I can make an argument that when you say a Mexican person can't adjudicate my case because they're a Mexican, I can say, kind of has some white supremacy kind of drizzled all over it. And when you look at, you have people like Sebastian Gorka and Stephen Bannon in the White House. Okay, well, I have concerns about that. But again, you like take a page out of the people who you're saying are the oppressors. Like, you know, like take a page out of the Nixon playbook, right? Use the coded language. The coded language is, you know, you attack his policies. You say this policy disparately impacts these groups of people, right? Sitting there and coming out on Twitter and calling Donald Trump a white, and it's bad strategy, again, by the left. Worst
well,
fucking strategy.
Well, Jamel Hill is not an agent for the left, though.
Okay. She's not?
No, she's an ESPN host.
All right, see, now, we want to downplay that, but she took it, she wasn't, she, per she, her, she wasn't working for ESPN.
No.
She was, you know, voicing her opinion, and she's taken responsibility for herself.
She's inserted herself into the political realm.
Right. And she's done it on Twitter multiple times.
Okay.
I don't disagree with, like, you have a platform, use it, but you have to be a little bit smarter than coming out and saying, well, and, oh, by the way, Donald Trump's a white supremacist. Like, I think it's a bad move on her part. I'm not saying that she's wrong. I
actually don't consider him to be a white supremacist. I consider him to be just a narcissistic elitist. I don't. I think if he, if well, no,
you definitely,
I mean,
took that from me. I told you that.
But. Well, I mean, I didn't take that. You
literally took the words out of my
mouth.
Okay,
I've said them too. But I'm not. How do I say this right? If he was, I don't think he looks at Ben Carson differently because he's black, other than maybe how we can use him to his advantage. I don't think he has and elitism against people necessarily just because of their color. I think it's purely his ego and their level of wealth.
I
bet he loves the Saudi Royals.
You know, I've said this multiple times that I think that he is an elitist. I think that he's not a racist as much as he's an elitist. And if you have the money to play, then you can play. You know, I've heard him interact with, you know, athletes and entertainers.
Right.
And he's done that his entire career.
What was the group of rappers he met with a while back?
Stop.
No, seriously though, right? Didn't he try to give financial advice to?
No, he gave marriage advice.
Marriage advice.
which
we want prenup. We want prenup. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just listen. I'm what I'm saying is, you can make an argument for it, again, based on his actions, based on things he's done. You could say, this guy, you know, I mean, taking the idea that based off of what you do and the things that you say, I could say based off of what we know white supremacy is, that kind of feels like it, right? You're saying Mexicans can't adjudicate my
case. Yeah, oh, you can make a case.
Because you're a Mexican.
You can make a case.
I don't want black people counting my money. I don't want black people living in my houses
What do you say the thing about counting money? I've never heard that.
You might want to Google that one.
All right.
but, I mean, so when you put it all together, you can sit there and make the argument all day. And again, not that she was, not that her statement was wrong, but I think when you're in that position of certain level of celebrity, right? And you're,
right.
And someone else controls how you get paid, right? And someone else can, you're on someone else's network, right? You have to make a choice, right? You, if you want to, like, you have to be smart enough. Like, if you want to say political things and you want to insert yourself into the political realm, you're already on thin ice.
Yeah,
okay?
I mean,
you're already on thin ice, and so there's no, you're on thin ice because say something that ESPN doesn't like, they can fire you.
Sure.
You have examples of it.
Yep.
So you have to be careful there, and it's that's not being careful how you say things. Like, she could have made just an effective point by pointing to specific things that Donald Trump has done and then made it very plain. She could have pointed to A, B, and C, and then left it at, and tell me, what do you think?
Form your own conclusion.
What does this
look
like and sound like to you? Right? Says the same thing, but in a much more effective manner. And that's where, especially with her, because Jemele Hill is a very intelligent woman. She's a very smart woman. She's very well-read. And I think that she just could have done this better than the – and that's where Twitter gets you into trouble. You only got 142 characters, and it's right there at the tip of your fingertips. We've seen it with our president.
Regardless of your level of alcohol in your system.
Right, right. We've seen it with our president. We've seen it with Ted Cruz. We've seen it with –
How did we not talk about that yet?
Twitter can get you in trouble very, very quickly if you're not careful. And I think she wasn't careful. People may come down on me on this, and again, it's not about what she said being right or wrong. What she said, I believe, is correct, but can be stated another way where it doesn't bring nearly this amount of firestorm, right? And
isn't the flip side of that, and I've heard, so saying this to her in a way could be taken as you are saying stay in your lane, Jemele.
Okay, yeah,
right?
I am.
Okay.
I absolutely am.
Okay.
Because if she would have been fired, ESPN would have been well within their rights of her being fired, and now she doesn't have a platform because she's not going to Fox Sports. Fox Sports isn't going to pick her up. So,
That's a fairly safe bet.
Right. So, I mean, you have to realize, when you have limited options for a platform like that, it's more important that you keep that platform, and you have to be a little bit more surgical and technical in the way you disseminate your opinion. Now, we don't like it, and it's not fair, but again, this isn't about fair. This is about, again, it's about winning.
People kept saying First Amendment, and again, this is not a First Amendment issue. She is not, if the White House would have said, we're having the FBI look into Ms. Hill's statements, that would be a First Amendment issue. The fact that Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, this is a fireable offense.
Well, okay. Now, she needs to be careful. Because, I mean,
What are they doing sticking their nose into ESPN?
Right.
It's pretty pathetic.
Right.
I mean, White House shouldn't be doing that.
And we've said that all along, right? Like, I mean, Donald Trump shouldn't be sticking his nose into the fact that, if a team signs Colin Kaepernick, he's going to send out a bad tweet, and that team is going to have, is going to suffer the wrath of Donald Trump tweeting. I think that that's something that someone in the White House needs to reel him and them in on.
So the Daily Show talked about this, and Roy Wood Jr. went on there and defended Jemele Hill, and then they showed a clip of Roy Wood Jr. with Jemele Hill on her show saying, are you defending, he claimed not to know her, and then they showed that, and then they showed a bunch of Fox News folks and Hannity saying, can you imagine if someone had said this about the Obama administration, if they had called him a black supremacist? And then the Daily Show showed a tweet. Well, they did many times, including Trump calling Obama a racist.
Right.
There is a tweet from Trump a couple years back where he called Obama a racist. So I really feel your outrage there, White House staff. But look in your own back. I mean, I found that hilarious that they literally had not only someone doing it, but the man who would become president doing exactly what they were showing their outrage over.
Right.
So we don't have to imagine Hannity. We saw it.
Right. We saw it firsthand as to what happened. And nothing happened, by the way.
To
anybody.
Oh, no. I mean, and Trump.
I mean, Ted Nugent, Trump would have Ted been Nugent threatened to kill Obama. And not only did nothing happened to him, but he ended up in the White House after Trump got elected.
Who threatened to kill him?
Ted Nugent.
Oh, Ted Nugent. Okay, yes, he did. Well, it's not exactly what he said, Steve. He used coded language.
Right, well, exactly. Exactly. But, I mean, that, and so where I come out on that is,
very
again,
poorly coded language, by the way.
What she said, I don't believe was wrong, but I think from a strategic standpoint, you just have to phrase it better to protect yourself and to you have to realize what you're up against and who you're up against. And right now, from a media standpoint, conservative media has the upper hand. More people trust Breitbart, Fox News, you know, the Washington Examiner. It's and whether the perception is, and perception is reality, and vice versa. Like, there are more people who are going to those conservative news sources and neutral news sources, and then that's where they're getting their information from. And if you have, and those are the people who are the loudest.
Yes,
I shouldn't say
okay.
I shouldn't say that's
more.
A majority.
Right.
But you have more people. You have more voices that are going to that area for their information. So you have to know what you're up against, and you have to know how to defeat it. Right? Maybe it did liberate you to say, I feel that he's a white supremacist. Okay, but strategically, you have to be able to phrase that better so you can better deal with the people who are going to attack you for that thought.
Right. But I mean, how many times in the past have I defended a comedian for, you know, so and so did this or said this, but they're a comedian. They should not be taken as seriously as a public figure. And I put Jemele Hill in that category. So what you're saying is not wrong. I don't disagree with your statements. I just think that she is a sports journalist who delved into politics. I completely agree that if ESPN wanted to get rid of her, let's face it, 9 out of 10 times when someone gets fired for a tweet or a comment, it's not because of just that. They wanted to get rid of that person a long time ago, and that gave them the excuse. If Jemele Hill's ratings go way up because of this, she ain't going anywhere. If her ratings plummet, she'll be one tweet away from getting fired.
Agreed. That's the ugly part of show business.
Right. And I mean, you know, like we've said a bunch of times with Colin Kaepernick, he made a stand. Ironic choice of words in this particular case, but he, you know, had a cause he was passionate about. He made a political statement, and it has cost him the ability to continue to work in his field.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Sorry, I was reading something.
All right.
Thanks for covering for me. Great job.
Well, I'm trying to.
No, it's fine. So, you know, with that. You know, going to the free speech, I want to bring up Colin Kaepernick.
Okay.
And, you know, from the beginning, I've been noncommittal on Kaepernick. I think that, you know, the spirit of what of his protests made a lot of sense. I understood why people were offended by it. I think people are using it on both sides and turning it into something way more than it is. You know, the police officers who are the, you know, the military that are taking offense, and the people who have never been in the military and know, like, their friend's cousin's brother was in the military, so, you know, they have this, you know, now all of a sudden they have this diehard attachment to veterans, and then people who have never actually watched the national anthem during a football game, but now all of a sudden will tell you that they stand in their homes every time it's played, which I'd like to see, you know, I'd like cameras in everybody's homes today in about 1 hour at 1 o'clock when all the games kick off. And I want to see if, you know, like the number of people standing in their homes with their hands over their heart.
I got to tell you something funny about that. Go ahead.
But, you know, here's my thing with Kaepernick. You know, a lot of people are, I stand with Kaepernick, and I'm gonna boycott the NFL because, you know, because Kaepernick should have a job. I'll tell you, I think Kaepernick should be signed. There's a lot of bad quarterback play out there,
right?
And Colin Kaepernick is not Tom Brady, and he is not Ben Roethlisberger or Drew
Aaron Rodgers,
or
right.
Aaron Rodgers. But he is better than Tom Savage. He is better than
E.J. Manuel is a backup quarterback in the NFL right now.
Right. I mean, there's just a lot of people I saw play last week that looked awful. I mean, like, shit. I mean, he played better than Andy Dalton, who, you know, I mean.
Without getting on the field.
Right. Andy Dalton had, like, a negative quarterback rating. So, I mean, I think that Colin Kaepernick should be in the league. But here's the reason why he's not. I don't think it's because he knelt. And you can sit there and there are people, oh, well, the owners are saying that they hate him and they can't stand him. This is where Colin Kaepernick got himself into trouble. He wears the socks with the pigs on them, right? He wears the Fidel Castro shirt. He doesn't vote. And when you put those sort of things out there, that out there, like that's gonna draw some political. You're gonna rankle some political feathers that way. And then you put that on top of the fact of what he's kneeling for, and yeah, you're talking about a lot of white owners who get very old, rich white guys who get very patriotic because they know that their base. You know, their base is very patriotic, right? Like if their base, if their base were flipped, you know, in terms of, you know, I mean, everybody would have a black power fist and a Afro pick.
If it meant more money,
then they would absolutely be standing behind Colin Kaepernick. But it doesn't mean more money for them. They know that it's something that people on the right are passionate about. And apparently there are a lot of people on the right that are fans.
I mean, a lot of small town America, huge football fans. A lot of the South, huge football fans.
Right.
And
so my issue with Kaepernick is that, and he's done some good things. He put his money where his mouth was, and he, you know, he donated to some quality nonprofit organizations to help again the cause that he was fighting for. You know, he was a part of the Know Your Rights campaign, which is directly linked to what he was fighting for, which is, again, you know, police brutality and the treatment of, you know, black people by police. And that's important. But my thing is, you have a guy like Malcolm Jenkins in the league as well. And Malcolm Jenkins plays for the Philadelphia Eagles. He's an Ohio State Buckeye. And, you know, since the second week of last season, you know, he puts a black power fist in the air during the national anthem. You know, you put the black power fist in the air, especially when you're – and Malcolm Jenkins is not – like, Colin Kaepernick, you know, like, not that this matters, but, I mean, he's biracial. He's a lighter-skinned guy. Like, he's wearing an afro and braids or whatever. But, like, Malcolm Jenkins is about as black as they come, right? And there's no mistaking who or what he is. And so when he puts a black fist up in the air during the national anthem, it's pretty clear – the statement that he's making, okay?
Sure.
And Malcolm Jenkins has been an advocate for the social justice reform that Colin Kaepernick is talking about. You know, like since last year, he's spoken with a U.S. senator. He's delivered an address to an Ivy League school. He's visited inmates in prisons. He's helped the ACLU in a voter drive. He'll basically go anywhere and talk to anyone at any time about these issues. He's not afraid to get in front of any audience, any media member, and talk about it intelligently. He's also still able to get on the field and perform at a high level. And so that's another aspect of it, right? Like this whole thing with Colin Kaepernick is not just as simple as, well, you know, if he were white, then he would be on the field or his stats or his stance. There's a lot to it, right? Colin Kaepernick's play had declined. Colin Kaepernick had been injury prone.
And he asked to get out of his contract because he wanted to be a starter.
He opted out of his contract, but he also was probably going to get cut. But that was before he even made a stand. And then you put on top of that the fact that he wore the socks, wore the shirt, didn't vote. You know,
yeah.
And
his name became synonymous with this whole issue,
right?
So doing these things get covered
again,
locally.
Knowing the league, knowing who you work for. Now, people are. It's, you know, there are ways. Again, there are ways to do this, right? Malcolm Jenkins is doing it the right. No one's gonna call Malcolm Jenkins a sellout. You want to call Malcolm Jenkins a sellout, then you say that shit to his face. That is my go-to,
now.
Right? Because it's funny how it doesn't happen, though, right? It's just like, tough guy. Okay, fine, right? Then what are you? You're not so tough right now because you're not you.
I know.
But,
I'll take it personal.
You know, people always go to the tough guy thing, but it's amazing how tough they aren't when they're not behind a computer punching letters into a keyboard. So my thing with Malcolm Jenkins is that he's fighting for the same things Colin Kaepernick is fighting for. He's saying it out loud and to the public to anyone who will listen, right? And he's doing it in a manner that you can't deny, right? Like, I mean, he's going and he's doing the same things that Colin Kaepernick is doing, but he's doing it not only in just with money and visiting people, you know, and like playing with kids, but he's going, I mean, he's talking in front of U.S. senators. Senators are the people who make and change the laws, right? I mean, talking with inmates and saying, all right, gentlemen, you know, how did you end up here? How can you have changed that? What, you know, like, what is your,
what are you going to tell your kids?
Right. Like, how are you going to, how are you going to help to prevent in this cycle of what we know is it can be a vicious, vicious cycle of, you know, father in prison, son in prison, grandson in prison. How do we end that? And so don't tell me that this league doesn't allow you to be the person that you want to be. Now, yeah, sometimes you got to, there's consequences, but sometimes you have to kind of play their game, and sometimes you gotta do things a little bit differently than you would if you didn't work for a multi-billion-dollar corporation / cartel. But you can. There are plenty of players in here in the NFL who stand for social justice, who fight for social justice, who are effective in doing so, that are playing in this league today. Some of them are starters, some of them are not. Some of them are names that you know, and some of them are names that you don't know. Right, so don't go paint the NFL with this broad brush that it's this giant racist slave driving league that controls what the players say and do, and that they can't do what they want, because it's bullshit. Right, you're not paying attention. It's lazy. This thing, this boycott, because I stand with Colin Kaepernick, to me, it's lazy. You're not looking at all of it. It's a complex issue about his ability to play, about the way he's chosen to do the things that he's chosen to do, and whether those things have been effective and how effective they are. Because there's too many other players that I can look at, including who we just talked about last week. The
Michael
Bennett,
Bennett
brother.
Michael Bennett.
Michael Bennett. Or was it Martellus Bennett? It was Michael Bennett. You know, I mean, Michael Bennett and Martellus Bennett have been very outspoken about the league itself, you know, and about racial issues and injustice and everything else. And, you know, and you saw what happened with Bennett, and you saw the NFL back him.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and listen, the Bennett brothers pull no punches. Someone tackled Martellus Bennett the wrong way in training camp last year, his own teammate, and he picked him up and body slammed him. And said, "You don't want any of this. And if you want to do it, if you want to bring it. We can do it outside, in the parking lot, right?" And then guys got between them, and they told the guy who tackled him, like, "You don't want to go in the parking lot. He's serious,
okay?
Right? Like, they're head cases, right? But the NFL knows this, and they still support them, right? But they still also support Malcolm Jenkins. They still support, you can go down the line in terms of players throughout the years, whether it's."
And they didn't do anything to Tom Brady for having him make America Great hat in his locker,
right.
Which annoyed me for many years.
But I hate
Tom Brady.
But I mean, the argument is, you know, black players are subdued. And I mean, you look at what Warwick Dunn built houses for people, for specifically black kids in urban settings whose parents had been, you know, killed in violence. You look at, the running back who was with the Jets and he went to Patriots, Curtis Martin.
Okay.
And you know, like, what he did for years. You look at a guy like a Walter Payton, who they name a fucking award after, and the things that he did for people. You look at, you know, all these different players who impact lives on a daily basis, positive lives, and a lot of the players in the league are black, who come from urban settings, who know all about this, and they fight about it. And if you listen, they're talking about it. Right, but you're getting behind Colin Kaepernick, and you're putting all your eggs in his basket.
He's become the face of that,
right? And I don't know if he necessarily needs to be the face. And oh, by the way, again, just speaking strategy, if you really wanted Colin Kaepernick to have a job, you'd shut the fuck up. Because what does the NFL hate? The coaches will tell you, and the GMs will tell you, they hate distractions.
So distractions, really, controversy.
If you really wanted Colin Kaepernick to have a job, you probably wouldn't protest outside of the NFL headquarters.
And if you say you're going to take your dollars away, well, I mean. I will say this. The right protest, if you want to hurt the NFL, is threaten them with losing money. Now, the fact that you can't effectually accomplish that is a different story altogether.
And that's the other thing. You know, I mean, well, never mind. But that's my point. Go ahead, jump in.
So two other things about the anthem. I went to a bar last week to watch the Bills game, and there was a girl, as soon as the anthem started, put her hand over her heart at a sports bar in Lakewood, Ohio, and... Part of me wanted to say, shut the fuck up, you phony. And the other part of me wanted to say, while you're doing that, you were sitting. Oh, I, just, well, I thought it funny. If you're trying to show, stand up, bitch. Okay. Sorry, but
so well, you left out the fact that she was sitting. Because I mean, if you're gonna like, here, this is,
hey, do it or don't.
Listen, right. Shit. That's the thing. If you're gonna do it, like, if you
feel a need to show your patriotism at a sports bar on a Sunday afternoon, do it.
But you know what? To me, not even jokingly, do it. Right. If you're that passionate about it, then show me.
Right.
Because I hear and I read and I see a lot of people that are super patriotic in a comment section on, on a magazine, on a website or on social media or something like that. And my question to you is back to what I said earlier. What are you doing on Sundays? You know exactly what time the games kick off. The national anthem, it is 12:15 p.m. right now on Sunday. Games start at about 1:05. That means national anthems will be going off at 1:01 p.m. What will people be doing? Are they going to be standing in their homes? Are they going to be at game time with their hats off, with their hands over their hearts? And if they are, good for you.
Good for you.
Good for you. And
I don't believe you.
Well, no, it's not that I don't believe you, but I want to see it every fucking week. Because if at any point in time,
see it 5 years ago,
I want to see it 5 years ago, and if at any point in time during a national anthem while the NFL is going on or while any sporting event is going on, if you are sitting down, then I should be allowed to punch you in the face. You know, I mean, if you are,
I don't see that bill getting introduced. The Steve punch in the face bill has been proposed.
Just driving around the country, just like, were you sitting?
Bam! You'd ring the doorbell at 1:01 if they answer. They weren't being patriotic,
right? You had the nerve, the gall to answer this door while the anthem played.
There are solutions other than punching people in the face, but sorry,
it seems like I don't know if there are anymore.
All right. Well, so that was the one thing. Another positive thing came out though. Before the Cleveland Browns Pittsburgh Steelers game, they actually did like a public service announcement where players said things about, you know, what they were concerned about socially, and then the players walked out arm in arm with the police. Sure, it's just a public gesture, but at least it was a public gesture.
You're talking about the game I was at that I invited you to that you stiffed me over?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
No, okay, hold on.
Yeah, sure, I know.
I'm calling bullshit
anyway,
on that.
I was there.
I'm talking about the game that you bought a ticket for someone else for, and then got pissed at that person, and I was
No, I didn't get pissed at him. Like, they couldn't go. Okay. So you were my number two.
I had
the person had done me a favor, and in return, they wanted to go to the home opener. I said, I can make that happen. I made it happen. They then could not go, right? They specifically asked for this. They then couldn't go. So I said, oh, Jim would want to go. And Jim said, oh, fuck you, Steve.
I don't believe I said, fuck you, Steve. I said, no, I'd like to go watch a game that I care about.
Whatever.
Yes, I'm a bad person. I love how in your mind I have wronged you on this.
Oh, yeah, you fuckwad.
That is such shenanigans. All right. So speaking of freedom of speech and consequences, there was a fireman who was on Facebook and was involved in saving a dog from a fire and got a congratulations from a friend. And would you like to quote him or should I?
No, you can.
Well, thank you so much. He wrote something to the effect of, I'd rather save one dog than a million niggers. I've occasionally defended people saying, oh, it's a joke. Oh, it's whatever. I've got nothing but what the fuck and fuck you to say to this guy. I mean, even if you think you're being funny and you're not, that's reprehensible. When your job is to protect people in times of emergency, I grant no sympathy. I think he was fired, and I have no sympathy whatsoever for him. The idea of saying something dumb in a moment. I don't know if you saw that one gamer on YouTube who called someone a nigger and then had to write this apology, and I didn't know who the guy was because I'm not one of those YouTube gamer people. But he said something that was pretty revealing of his character, and I've got no sympathy for that guy either. But when you write something on Facebook, you're pushing those buttons. You are choosing those words, and then you're hitting enter. And you're saying, I want everyone who I'm associated with to be able to see this. And while neither of the things I just described are acceptable, to me, the Facebook thing is way, way worse, especially when you're a fireman and not some video game playing loser. Is that about summing up?
Right. So, yeah, no, yeah. That, I mean, I fully agree with that. And I'm just trying to figure out exactly who said what. But, oh, okay, so we have this, the firefighter's name was Tyler Royston, R-O-Y-S-D-O-N. And he, you know, he had, like you said, he had saved someone, and then he had made the comment that, you know, saving one dog is more important than a million niggers. And he got suspended. He wasn't fired.
He wasn't fired?
You know, it, that, first of all, it happened in Franklin, Ohio. Okay, so, yay, Ohio.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show that I can't, as a black man, I can't let what I know out there in terms of racism, I can't let that dominate my thought process. I can't let it control, you know, my just day-to-day actions. You know, because
it can just consume you.
It can consume you, and you see it. There are people. I have black friends. People that I you know interact with on social media. People that I've known for a long time. Even you know a lot of the people that I went to law school with. Just the current climate has consumed them to a point where their ability to think rationally, you can see it sort of slipping away, and it's gut-wrenching because I understand why and how they're going that way, right? When all of a sudden it feels like something that we fought against, that we as a people fought against for our entire literally existence in this country, and you thought things were getting better, and then all of a sudden the curtain gets pulled back and the scab gets ripped off and you realize it's still a festering wound that has infected, you know, it's infecting more people and it's growing. Like, that can be a very daunting thing when you're walking around and you don't know, like, you see, you know, you walk into an office and you're outnumbered 50-1, right? And you have to wonder, like, statistically, there's a pretty large percentage of these people that are in this office who think that me, because of my skin color, I am less of a person, right? Like, they think that I am not capable of doing things because of the way that I look, because of the color of my skin.
Or they think he only got here because
Or they think that the only reason I got the job is because of the color of my skin. Or the only reason I was able to go to a certain place or do a certain thing is because of the color of my skin. Or that because of the color of my skin, eventually I'm going to do something that's going to be so bad and I'm going to fuck up so bad that, you know, that's going to be the way that they're able to get rid of me and not have to deal with me. And then they can replace me with someone that they feel more comfortable with, right? If you let that thought process consume you, it will literally tear you to the ground. And, you know, as a black person, you live with that daily and you just have to kind of stamp that down and put it away and put it somewhere dark and deep and don't let it control you. But every now and again, it creeps out. But then the problem is, you know, I say racism, you say, nah, it's past, it's not that big of a deal, nobody really thinks like that anymore. And then you see incidents like this. And then you say, oh, well, that's anecdotal, right? Oh. But the problem is that the anecdotes are building, right? I mean, to a point where we saw what happened in Charlottesville, right? To a point where people are trying to explain that away as, well, that's just a small percentage of the population. And that was probably all of the racists all in one spot. So
calling all racists was probably...
That's really all you have to worry about. And, you know, everyone's supposed to, like, take that as some sort of comforting note that, you know, all the racists were in Charlottesville at one time. That's really all there are. And, you know, the term white supremacist only really applies to those people in Charlottesville. And so when you use it for the president or you use it to describe a Stephen Bannon or someone else, it's not really accurate because, you know, they're not torch carrying, hood wearing, you know, drooling at the mouths like true racists like we've seen in the movies.
So in the past, in our old show and other times, I've said that, you know, things are better for, you know, black Americans and better for race in this country now than they've ever been. I said that about a year ago. And I believe that when I said it, but I think we've regressed a lot in the last year. I'm not saying my statement was basically, I mean, you got really mad at me when I said it, then you said, oh, you're making a tallest midget argument, and I absolutely was making a tallest midget argument. But I think we've got a shorter midget now. Because I think there's come a like I said, the vocal white middle class victim, white lower middle class victim mentality has become way too, I don't want to use the word accepted, but people are much more comfortable vocalizing that in public now. And I think part of it...
But Jim, that's not a regression. It's always been there. Like, I mean, so what you're saying is, as long as people like that, this is, I call it the Youngstown argument, right? Like, white people in Youngstown make this shit, make this argument all the time, right? Racism will go away as long as you don't talk about it. As long as no one's talking about it, it's fine, right? Like, they don't care what happens behind closed doors, and that's why Youngstown is not right. quite the most evolved place you'll ever go to. But, you know, like, if you just don't talk about it, then it's cool. And since nobody was really talking about it, then we were good. But now people are talking about it and openly expressing themselves about it, so now all of a sudden we're regressing. And the thing is, for me, right, like, I've seen this my entire life. You can, like, you can hear it in conversations. You know, you can see, you can tell when people are having the conversation, they have to try to all of a sudden pivot when you walk into the room or when they think that you're within earshot. This isn't new.
No, I'm right? not saying it's new.
It's not new, it's and new. It's not better. Like, I mean, like, there's just, it's not better, and it wasn't better before. It was still shitty before. Right now, people are just saying it out in the open, and that doesn't mean that it's worse. It just means that it's real for you now.
Well, what I'm trying to say is, that in, all right, if you look at 60s and 70s, things were way worse than they are now, right? Come on, 60s?
There's not
water cannons in the street just mowing down black
people.
No,
there's not. But, I mean, like, the entire South is pretty much resegregated. So, I mean, we're looking at, if you go and you look at the demographics of the South, and you look at places like Alabama and Mississippi, and you look at the schools, like, you look at the schools and how the kids are divided, white, black, period, right? And if you have a school that is a majority white, but it's looking like there's a whole lot of black people coming into it, then those schools are literally separating themselves from counties to become their own school districts so that they don't have to have black kids in their schools. This is not me making this up.
I'm not saying you are.
You can go to the New York Times, and they wrote an article about it. I told you about this months ago when I first read about the case. There's multiple cases like this. It's happening throughout the South. We've already seen it happen here. Like, you go to Cleveland City Schools. It's happened right here.
Yeah.
If you go to John Hay is a local school. The majority of that school, it's 98% black. They have a 70% graduation rate, and 70% of the kids there can't read.
I mean, that's a shift in topics, but I totally agree.
But All that has to do with race relations. All of it has sure. to do with race relations. It's
and
not.
I think that's that. If you're going to start to fix things, that's where it starts.
Fully right? agreed. But that isn't new. That didn't happen.
Maybe I said it badly.
No. It's not that you said it badly. You said exactly what you meant to say, and you said it in a very clear way. But what I'm saying is, you're saying race relations are worse now than they were, you know, a few years ago, or you know, a year ago, or what have you. And what I'm saying is, they're not worse. They're the same. You're just seeing it through a different light. And I'm saying that all these other factors, from my vantage point of what I look at to say, are race relations okay? When I've been looking at the schools for the last 10 to 15 years, and you can see the segregation just growing and growing and growing, and when you can see the way hiring practices have been working over the last 20 years, right? You can say, oh, well, look, you know, there's five CEOs of the top 500 that are black, so you know, you guys are doing well. Or you know, like, a person's just like, hey, we got a black guy that works in our office, so you know, things are good. Like, all that sort of shit, like, that doesn't mean shit is that's nothing. Those are stupid anecdotal little side things that you can point to, but that doesn't mean that overall anything was ever really better, right? Like, I mean, like, you go through the entire 90s, like, the 90s weren't great. Like, how many, they locked away an entire generation of black people in the 90s. That wasn't awesome. They didn't need water cannons. They had actual fucking cannons that they were using to put people in jail or put them in the ground.
Well, and that's still going on.
Right.
Right? I mean, so fix number one, I think, is the schools. Fix number 1A is incarceration practices. And really, as much as it is incarceration practices, it's post-incarceration practices. I mean, if you put someone in jail for a year, and let's say you give someone, you know, and I was reading something the other day about same judge, same charges, white kid gets 6 months probation, black kid gets a year in jail. So there's clearly I wish I had that article in front of me, but I meant to send it to you. But it's clear that the judicial system is biased against people of color. No, Everything, I mean, every objective piece of evidence proves that.
You look at the rape case with the kid, the swimmer kid in Stanford, and you look at the rape case of the kid in Steubenville, and you can see the stark difference, right? The kid in Steubenville, he went to Youngstown, he's at Youngstown State right now. He played, the entire country is pissed at Bo Pelini because he played this kid who was convicted of rape, spent a year in jail, is now going to YSU. He played in a football game yesterday. And they're out for Bo Pelini's head because he played this kid, and people want that kid off the field, right? Kid in Stanford spent 3 months in jail, and doesn't matter what he's doing. No one cares, right?
Right. And the Stanford case was – I know the details of both cases to a degree.
They were both ugly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, like the Stanford kid should have done at least what the kid – like should have done at least the year in jail that the kid in Steubenville did. Right, I mean, both ugly cases.
You can significantly argue, more, I would argue.
Right, exactly. But I mean, at the very least, at least put them on the same scale. But anyway, to your point.
Yeah. So, I kind of lost my train of thought now.
You were saying where race relations were, and
well, yeah, I guess. To me, the all right, maybe I could say it more clearly. There used to be a whispered racism that has become much more vocal. So it used to be in the 60s and 70s and 80s, you could be pretty out and out racist and no one batted an eye. Around the 90s, people started saying that shit ain't right. And people being racist in public, in their public lives, became taboo. So you get a lot of people who would say, you know, so they were having this protest because black people. You know, they whisper, they wouldn't say stuff out in public, out in the open. And in the last couple of years, it seems to me that people like this jagoff cop or fireman, I know you don't like names, but fuck him.
I'm not butt fucking him.
I just said butt fuck him. Okay. Wow. This is a relatively sober show. I kind of
relatively,
wish we were.
Yeah, I
had one Irish coffee and this went south. All right. Anyway. I just think white people being overtly racist used to be something that was publicly scorned, and it's not going the right direction in my mind.
Here's the thing, and this, again, where I disagree with you.
Okay.
Because that silent racism, for us,
it's worse,
is a killer.
Okay.
Because silent racism means that, like, so if that guy doesn't say anything, we don't know that he's a racist. But he's a fireman. He's in a position where he's saving people's lives, and... You have a fire, and there's a black person who doesn't make it out. He can just chalk it up and say, well, tried, didn't make it. You know, but now you have to go back, and now they fire him, there's no, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're out of that position.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Like, that guy is in a position of importance, mm-hmm. right? And in holding those views in a position of importance is incredibly dangerous. And if he's silent, he can maintain that position and he can work that position any way he wants, including if there's biases and prejudices that he has, he can play that out however he wants under the
keep my friends closer, my enemies closer, right? I mean,
right. I mean, but now that he's outed himself, like, it's almost for us, it's like, yeah. Not cool to hear, but at least I know who you are, and I can remove you from where you want to be. When it's silent, though, like, now all of a sudden, like, those are the people who are in a position to hire and fire, right? And then we don't know their views, but then all of a sudden it's just like, you know, it's just like, oh, well, this guy has never hired a black person. And the people that he's kind of inherited that are black always tend to get fired. And you never know. He can always point to merit and job production or whatever. But then people are now feeling more open about it. And they're saying, oh, fuck it. I just don't like black people.
And at least
they're getting fired.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know,
I would rather know than have to, like, be paranoid and guess.
I guess that that might be a positive side effect of what I'm describing. That at least it's.
I mean, it all sucks, but what I'm saying is, for us, it sucks. Either way, it sucks, right? Whether it's silent or it's out loud, either way, it's a kick in the dick for me.
And I've admitted that 5 years ago, I would have been one of those guys saying racism as an institution doesn't exist anymore. I've subsequently admitted I was wrong about that. so maybe a guy like this doing this sort of thing does, you know, blow the lid off that and say, you can't make that statement, and here's objective proof. Okay.
Right. I mean, and I think what will happen is that it'll go in cycles, right? I mean, I think mm-hmm. we are probably another couple generations away from, like, truly weeding it out. And I don't know if you ever will weed it out, because as long as there are differences, as long as there are physical differences, people will look to separate themselves, right? It just naturally happens. Like, as much as people and humans are, you know, have a pack and tribe mentality, they will also always look to separate themselves and distinguish themselves one way or another, right? No matter what.
I
mean, black, whether it's economic or whether it's physical, you know, I mean, there are arguments between black people about who's better between the darker and the lighter of the black people. I mean, you know, like Italians, whether you're from Northern Italy or Southern Italy, you know, East or West Germany.
I asked my grandmother, which was Sicilian once. I thought she was going to smack the taste out of my mouth.
Right. I mean, it's just like, like people will always look to separate themselves. And so as long as there are distinct differences between us, then there's always going to be some biases and prejudices that exist. So you'll never be able to weed it out. But just the, you know, the brutal inherent, not inherent, but the brutal racism, where, you know, people have ill will towards each other in the mass form that we see, like, that's going to take a couple more generations to really truly weed out.
Right.
You know, to get it more manageable.
And some of the changes we talked about need to happen, right? There needs to be a change in criminal justice practices. There needs to be a change in educational opportunities.
Right. I mean, more so the educational system is really where it has to change. And there are some things that you know, the urban, inner city, poor black community, there's some changes that they have to make internally to help facilitate the changes that we're talking about in the system, because it's just been proven that you cannot rely on the government. And this isn't me saying, you know, black people, you just need to do better. And if you just do better on your own, then things will get better. But it's when we have relied on the government to help us, they've fucked us. So in order to stop getting fucked, we're going to have to take control of the situation, period, right? And start to do things in a way that benefits us, because when we allow other people to take control of it, they do things that benefit them. So now you have these schools, and you have Cleveland City Schools, where you have so many administrators making $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year. The schools are top heavy. That's where all the money is going to. And these kids don't have computers, right? Their windows don't
open. They don't have books.
They don't have books. They have lead in the walls and asbestos, right? But you have people sitting there, you know, you've got a teacher who takes, you know, 40 days of vacation, gets paid $70,000 a year, and it's not all about the money that she's making. Like, if you're making 70, I don't care how much money you make, but you better be fucking good at your job. You know, $70,000 a year in Cleveland, Ohio goes a long fucking way, right?
So here's a part of the problem that I don't think gets said enough. You're right to say that the schools themselves have a lot of things they could do better, and you're absolutely right to say that society as a whole should be saying, what can we do better? If it means higher taxes, it means whatever, we need to make this better. And it doesn't, again, I don't want it all to equate to money, but the problem is that if you are a small government, you know, the problem is these damn liberals fucking up everything, and look at every major inner city, they have fucked up schools, they're all Democrats. That's a legitimate argument, but it gets used as an excuse not to do your part. And if you're inside the schools, you use, well, the system is stacked against us, and they use that excuse to not do their part. So the solution has to be, both sides need to say, regardless of what is outside of my capability to make better, I'm going to do what I can. And if you do that, instead of blaming the other side for not doing their part, do your part, and that's all you can do.
Right.
Sorry, I was a little too pie in the sky, but you know, it becomes a cycle. And like I said, my ex-girlfriend works for a nonprofit, and she works in inner city schools all the time. We still have a friendship, so I get to hear these stories, and they are nothing short of heartbreaking. Even the positive stories are heartbreaking. You see these kids, and they see this, you know, white girl show up, and she's bringing a camera along to do things, you know, chooses a kid to be her cameraman for the day, and the kid's just wide-eyed and experiencing something new. She's told me stories about going to schools with, you know, used books, and she goes into their libraries, and there's empty shelves in some of these libraries. I'm like, fucking A, we can't get these kids with the basics that they need. I donated a thing a couple years back to put holders for chalk And she said she didn't go as well as I'd hoped. It actually really made me sad. I like spent some time putting these things for her to install with Velcro so these kids could put their chalk in, and it didn't hold. And I honestly was pretty broken up about it. I didn't tell anyone that, but I felt really bad that these kids got excited about something that I tried to provide and it wasn't good enough.
And I think that's the part where what's really frustrating is that I think, you know, everyone talks about the money, right?
Yeah.
Oh, the schools need more money. The school needs more money. They actually really just need more effort, right? Like, you have to, what they really need is they need administrators. that's what I'm looking for. Administrators. What's amazing is I didn't actually drink last night, and I had
a small drink.
Anyway.
The obvious answer, Steve, is we're not drinking enough.
Period.
Okay, we can fix this.
But I think the big issue with education in these schools, and we're definitely a little bit off topic, didn't mean to talk about this, but one of the big things is the lack of effort from administrations, right? There are some schools and there are some teachers and some administrators who try very, very hard. And I think a lot of them get beaten into the ground, and a lot of them are really good, strong soldiers that continue to fight even though they're not getting a ton of support. But we need more of that, right? There are a lot of teachers who make do with what they have. So if we can give those types, we need a few more of those types of teachers. We need to give them better resources to work with, and then we need them to have the type of administrative support that they need to do their job, right? If you get a little bit more, if everyone, and again, pie in the sky, but if everyone just gave 10 more percent, you know, in terms of effort, right? And got a little bit more creative in terms of how do we can't, right now we can't make the class sizes smaller, so we're going to have to work with what we have, right? Is there any way we can get an additional teacher into these classrooms?
A teacher's aide, an intern.
Right, and someone else to help, you know, kind of manage the class in different ways that we can teach some of these materials, and how can we get materials into the kids' hands that are going to help them learn? All right, we don't have books, but can we just start printing off, you know, packets and that have snippets of information and do it that way or whatever. I mean, and this needs to start at the lower levels. I mean, because you're getting kids in junior high school that can't read.
Right.
Right. And then you have an entire class of kids who can't read in seventh and eighth grade. So it's, do we flunk the entire class and lose a lot of money?
Or
do we push them through the system so that we keep getting money and eventually hope that they figure out maybe little Taiwan will become a rapper and then he'll donate money to all his buddies and it'll all work out. Or maybe he'll go be an athlete and then
right. They'll
name a school after him and then he can do whatever he wants. Here's
what I've seen secondhand that is so heartbreaking is a lot of these kids are just so, you know, wide-eyed when they finally get something going their way. And I think to myself, all right, I've got other friends who've got kids in elementary school and junior high who are hearing, you know, all her homework is on her iPad, so she just does it here, and she's got, like, no written stuff. And then 20 miles away, you've got kids who don't have a functional library.
20. 3. I mean, think about the actual distance between, you know, like...
The person I was talking about was actually way out on the east side, but you're right.
Right, but
Five,
the distance between, you know, Rocky River and you know, one of those schools. I mean, it's... Well, some of these schools are right around the corner from each other, and it's amazing how, you know, an imaginary line dictates, you know, whether a kid's got a chance or not, you know, and you can sit there and say, oh, well, as long as you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and everybody's got a chance. Yeah, everybody's got a chance means, like, I mean, you know, like, you had a chance to play in the NFL. Like, I had a chance to play in the NFL. You know what I mean? Like, you had technically you had a chance to get a scholarship to play football, Jim, and so did I.
Right.
But my chance of getting that scholarship was a whole hell of a lot better than yours. And all the little fight in the world wasn't probably going to get you to the same level. Right.
I mean, not as you. I was actually a pretty good athlete. I'm not going to have my athleticism besmirched on the show, sir. Yes. You're got a better chance than me. No, right, I mean, right, look, sure, I don't. I wasn't. All right.
But point
no,
being,
fair enough.
Not yeah, everybody's right. got like.
Well, okay. But again, even further to that point, though. You went to a private Catholic school that had a tremendous football program. I went to a public school that had a pretty good one. So in terms of going to the next level, you had greater advantages than me, yes, in your physical gifts, but also in the program. And those are not unrelated. I mean, if you didn't have the physical talent, you, you know, wouldn't have played for that team and gotten the coach's eyes and whatever. But for me,
give me the rock.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, it was for a variety of reasons. I had less opportunity. Now, neither of us ended up playing in the NFL. I just had to put that out there. I don't know why.
Okay.
I don't know. No, I'm just saying. That, no, I mean, that was not the path for either of us. And neither of us were going to, you know, that was not, I'm sure at some point that was on your mind, but you knew, I think, a long time ago that you were better off using your brain than using your...
You're definitely putting words in my mouth.
Yes, I am.
Clearly don't listen when I talk, so...
Oh, well... No, come on. All right, whatever. You played ball at a high level, much higher than me. Got it.
It's not,
okay. Right, this is going way off track.
This is about to get you thrown through your own window in your own house. So let's go another direction. So we continue to play nice.
Okay. So we got to talk. We've sort of been apolitical this show, other than the way we started. We got to talk about Trump and Trump and DACA. So we literally have a schizophrenic president. I mean, we're going to build a wall. We're going to do this. We're going to talk. We're not going to let the dreamers stay in the country unless we build the wall, except we are.
The biggest issue with Trump is that he likes to be liked.
Yeah.
And he,
or needs to be liked. I think it might be
fair. Yeah. Yeah. He has that need and desire to be liked. And when he starts to get attacked and he starts to lose some of his, like, see, what was going on is that, you know, I think the Bannons and the Gorkas and everybody was kind of filtering out some of the bad. Like, he only watches, you know.
Well, like, they say he used to watch MSNBC, right? That's when he was attacking Morning Joe and all that other stuff.
Right, but that was, I think that's fine. But watching he primarily watches
Fox News.
He primarily reads Breitbart. Because they spoke the most favorably of him.
Right.
Right. And then...
And then he dismisses that other stuff and he calls it fake.
But the problem is that there was so much other stuff that wasn't favorable. And then when he, you know, made the decision to, you know, Bannon leaves and Gorka's out and Spicer's out and he starts to make all these decisions, he starts to feel the pressure. And now he's really kind of exposed and they're not filtering and they're not, you know, putting the earmuffs on him and... You know, like pumping him up and telling him, no, everything is great. Everything is great. Now, you know, he's getting information from all sorts of different sources. He's starting to falter. You know, when he first got elected, we talked about him maybe moving towards the middle. The campaign was just, you know, just
rhetoric.
Right. And then, you know, but, you know, the first almost year that he's been in office, he's hardline, you know, far right. Staying the course, but now we're starting to see him waver a little bit. I don't think he's politically moving to the center because he thinks strategically it's the right thing to do for the country. I think he's just doing whatever he thinks he can do to help his image and his status and
ego.
His ego. Exactly. Ego is the exact word that I'm looking for, right? He's looking for that ego boost to get him back in the good favor and the good graces of anybody, really. But what's happening is his base is literally coming apart. And it was a fragile base to begin with. You know, there were some people who held on because they just hated Hillary. They didn't like him, but they couldn't stand Hillary. And they bet on him, figuring that he would be able to figure out. But now what we're seeing... And what they're saying, I think, is that they don't have that confidence in his ability to figure it out. And his base is coming apart. Not to mention the fact that, you know, he promised a wall. He promised, you know...
Repeal Obamacare.
And they were going to go after Hillary and all this other stuff. And there was going to be no amnesty and DACA was going to go away. And now and all of a sudden...
Amnesty is the big one, right?
Right.
Because he's now saying, essentially, there will be amnesty. And then there's not... And Bannon and Breitbart are literally calling him Amnesty Don. Now he's getting called names by the guy that he handpicked to be his ass kisser in chief. And you know, I do not really empathize because I've made my positions on the man who currently occupies the White House very clear. But at some point, he's going to feel really fucking lonely. I mean,
I think he's there. I think he's in a lonely spot right now. A lot of new faces in the White House. A lot of those faces, you know, have not been great supporters of his. To the
Jared, you know, and Ivanka can only take you so far.
You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. We don't know enough about them from a political standpoint. We just know. I mean, I don't know much about Jared Kushner, to be honest with you. I mean, I know what I've read, but I mean, I don't know enough about the guy.
He is hidden in plain sight, for lack of a better way of saying it.
I mean, and then, you know, I mean, Ivanka has been running businesses. So, I mean, I think you're right. They're only going to get you so far. I think that there was a lot of weight put on their shoulders by moderates like myself and, you know, other political people, hoping that they could be the voice of reason when you've got guys like Sebastian Gorka, who I think was a fraud and should have never held an office that high in any form. I mean, I don't think he should have a seat on the local planning commission, more or less a seat in the White House. You know, the guy got his PhD at Steve and Jim's school.
And what's out of you?
Right. Like, I mean, come on. And, you know, like, I mean, obviously we know what Stephen Bannon is. I mean, he's a very intelligent, manipulative guy. You know, he was Trump's Karl Rove, for lack of a better word, but just not as intelligent, right? Like Karl Rove, for all his...
I think Bannon may be more intelligent worldly-wise, but he's not nearly a political operative.
He's not an operative, and he's not a strategist.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, he's a guy who just walks around with a very big stick and tries to bludgeon you over the head, and Karl Rove operated with a scalpel.
Yes.
And that's the difference there, and that's why Karl Rove survived and Bannon didn't. And now Trump is surrounded by new faces. He doesn't know who to trust. He doesn't know how to get his information. He's trying to figure out what his, like, where do I actually stand? He's kind of trying to figure out who he is now that he doesn't have those people there to prop him up. And this is what we're getting, kind of this mixed bag of, you know, I support it, I don't. I don't support it, I do. I don't support it, let's talk about something else that I do support that I don't. You know, I mean, and it's just, I mean, it's got to be a mess right now.
I think he's trying to say, what can I say to make them love me? And no matter what he says, someone's calling him.
He's getting attacked. And you know, we've gone away from the Deadpool for a little bit. And I think that, you know, obviously, rightly so, nobody's been fired. If I had to kind of go back to that.
You want to repick for the Deadpool?
Yeah. So I think next up, based off of what we just said, I think you might be looking at Rex Tillerson.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
And the State Department is a mess right now. And, you know, Trump, he's sending so many mixed signals on what we're doing internationally, and even what we're doing locally. But really, your State Department handles a lot of your efforts internationally, your messaging internationally. And Rex Tillerson has got to be sitting there right now saying, what the fuck is going on? And, you know, everything that you read is that there's just no, like, one, the State Department is severely understaffed, right?
Right.
And
that doesn't talk about enough.
Right.
That's not going to talk about enough. Because they are
severe. Like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, should I apply and just see what happens? Like, but, I mean, they're just not hiring people.
I'm going to go punch everyone in the face. I don't think is...
Right.
You know what?
Listen. Maybe you know what?
Maybe
in this White House. In this White House.
Maybe I'm wrong.
If I put that on my application,
what do you bring to the State Department? I will go door to door.
I will go country to country, punching people in the face, delivering our message. It's like, and you're hired. You know, I mean, I think Rex Tillerson is my choice on the Deadpool next. But I think
when you get sent to Russia to live your dream of partying with Vladimir Putin, then punch him in the face and end up dead, let me know when that gets scheduled. I'll do what
Vlad in his own turf. That is just not smart.
This is you, Steve. You got the brawn, and then you got the okay. Your strategist kicks in at the right times.
I don't know. I mean, that Rex Tillerson is my choice, but I actually think that there's a better choice than Rex Tillerson, and I'm curious to see if I choose it. If you choose it, yeah.
I would say Kellyanne Conway again. I just think she's starting to reemerge. And she's not doing herself any favors. But you're going to suggest who?
Jeff Sessions could be back on the block.
You know what? I wanted to stick with that, but
why. This is my reason why.
Well, first of all, you're making my mouth water.
Because Trump says to Jeff. Beauregard Sessions. Love that little.
I know you do that every time. But, I don't blame you.
But Trump says, listen, go tell the country we're sending DACA. It's terrible. Get rid of it. Jeff Sessions goes out and is just like, yep, we're getting rid of it. DACA's terrible. And it's over. So, yeah. Then the president comes back and says, who really wants to send home these immigrant kids? It's not their fault that they were here. They've got jobs. They're productive citizens. Do we really want to send them home? And I'm paraphrasing a tweet of Donald Trump's. That was actually his tweet.
Right.
Right. And then he says, you know, like, all right, we're going to fix it and everything else. And Sessions has got to be sitting there saying, you mother, are you? You sent me out there to get eviscerated by the, you know, mainstream liberal left media, blah, 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 you know, all that shit that they say. And then you come back and you literally kick me in the nuts again. Right. Like, I mean,
so you think it'll be a violent, you think Sessions will finally say I've had enough and walk?
I mean,
dude, you know, there's nothing that would make me happier.
I know. I mean, well, one. Yeah. Again, always be careful of that because, you know, the devil, you know, but
true.
But
all right, fine. Name someone who would be worse than Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. That isn't,
I
mean, okay, the head of the KKK would be worse, but name a legitimate, it'll probably be Giuliani or Christie, and I'm not happy about either of those, but that's better than Jeff Sessions.
It won't be. Well, it could be Christie now that Bannon's out of the White House, but I don't, like, Christie is just such a train wreck right now. I don't know. I think he's eaten himself out of a
That was interesting choice of words.
Well, every time I see the guy, he's like eating and not looking good and yelling at somebody.
Yes,
like,
he does.
I think that even the Trump White House looks at the Christie optics and says,
yikes. Okay, but I mean, look,
Giuliani to me is just as dangerous as Sessions. I'm sorry. Like,
you know,
it's
almost like what we talked about before. It's almost the two kinds of racism, right? So Sessions was such a racist that he couldn't get a federal judgeship in the 80s,
right,
which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And Giuliani would swear up and down he's the most colorblind person on the planet. And yet
some of the most racist policies.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
he,
you know, it's okay to violate a, you know, potential suspect on the street as long as...
No, it's okay to murder a suspect on the street. Murder a guy who doesn't have... You know, doesn't have a weapon, is standing in a vestibule and only has a wallet on him and put 120 bullets in him. You know, that's
Giuliani did. All right. All right.
Let's wrap it up as
we're over time. We're getting close to kickoff. We can't.
Yeah, we have to go stand for the
national anthem with our hands over our hearts at a bar. All right. Well, if you found that offensive, I apologize, but I don't.
So let's go ahead and shut it down, and then we will. I'm on the road this week.
All right,
a majority of the week. So we'll let's get another session in once I get settled into my hotel room. We'll do some, you know,
some remote stuff. All right,
and thanks for listening. Per usual, you could find us, on social media pretty much anywhere you go. It'll be at Whiskey Congress. You can find our website and the different stories that we write at whiskeycongress.com. Obviously, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/whiskeycongress. And if you need to get in contact with us, you can shoot us an email, steve@whiskeycongress.com, and interact with us on Twitter. We really appreciate it. We'll probably be coming up with another poll pretty soon here for people to weigh in on. And I have a Smirnoff Ice to drink, which I will not do on the air. Bye. Love you.
All right. You have to do it on the air. It's part of the rules. All right. Thanks a lot. We're out.